I've told him numerous times that we need to start doing some videos for the clinic, need to start doing some stuff. And he did some videos the other day and he messaged me and said, well, those videos are really effective. I said, that's why I've been saying it.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. In today's ever-competitive marketplace, marketing a dental practice has taken on an importance that it's never had before. And of course, we talk about the importance of internal marketing and external marketing, and all of those things really do form the part of a holistic marketing plan. But in today's episode, we're going to unpick online marketing in particular. And today, we're joined by Josh Rimmington from JR Marketing Group. And Josh is an expert at online marketing. He's run e-commerce sites, he's run entrepreneurial awards for his business excellence, and he is a well-known authority on this space. He works with lots of different businesses. He's had experience in the dental field, so he's across what can and can't be done in terms of the regulations. And in this particular conversation, we get to geek out a little bit. So for many of you, you'll know that I used to run an online marketing agency, and we're going to be talking about what's current and what's not. And Josh is going to outline what's the latest and greatest information. Now, as we do geek out a little bit in this particular episode, it's important to understand that the idea of this geek out session is not to teach you guys how to do SEO or how to run a pay-per-click campaign. It's to give you an understanding of how it works, because no matter who you get to provide these services for you, you need to have a broad brushstrokes understanding of how it all comes together so that you can make intelligent decisions about how you choose to invest your marketing dollar, ensuring you get the best possible result and ultimately getting new patients through the door while retaining your existing ones as well. So in this particular episode, as I said, Josh goes through a lot of details. As always, have a pen and paper handy, because I guarantee you, you're going to want to be taking notes so that you can ask your provider whether they're coming up to grade with all the online marketing they're doing for you. So without any further ado, here's Josh Rimmington. Josh Rimmington, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I've been looking forward to this for ages. How are you going, mate?
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to speaking today.
It should be a lot of fun. Mate, we caught up recently at an event in Melbourne, the DPOC conference, which was great. And, obviously we'd been following each other's stuff around the internet for a while. So I'm really looking forward to getting this one-on-one opportunity to, get inside your head around all things internet marketing, because you've got so much experience in that sphere, particularly in the dental space as well. So really keen to unpack all that sort of stuff with you today. But before we do get into the nuts and bolts of internet marketing and specifically what that means for dentists, can you just give us a bit of background on your story? How did you kind of get to be in this space?
Yep. So I started online probably about 13 years ago. And my original start with anything internet marketing was investigating buying and selling through eBay, with eBay being a big platform at the time, and it was before Facebook or anything else. So it was sort of investigating around that. And it was about the same time I was finishing school. After I finished school, went into a sales job. And while I was in that sales job, I found that we were using traditional marketing means of newspapers and radio and TV to get leads. So I started investigating better ways to get leads for myself and for the team that I was working for. And that just brought me into a whole new internet marketing world of that. And from there, I started learning SEO, and I actually left my sales position and started quite a few e-commerce sites, quite a few number of successful businesses that were named Australian Small Business of the Year, lots of different ones. I was named Young Entrepreneur of the Year in Queensland. So I was doing quite well just in the e-commerce space. We had a few bad businesses as well. It wasn't all smooth sailing, but there was plenty of ups and downs. But the whole time, what I was doing is learning SEO, online marketing, and finding out that I could compete with people like Bunnings and everything on an even playing field with a much smaller budget than they had. So that sort of opened my eyes to it. After I got out of e-commerce, I was taking some time off with when my first son was born, realized that kids don't do that much when they're little and got bored pretty quickly. And that's when I was getting asked quite a bit from a lot of people how to market online. And that's when I sort of jumped into helping other businesses market online. And my first client being a dental client, he had just opened his second clinic at the time. Since then, me and him have done about 16 or 17 clinics together.
Yeah, nice.
So he's been quite successful. I've sort of had that experience. And from there, it was just opening the world to what we can do online. At first, we were just starting with websites and SEO, but Facebook was becoming more popular, videos becoming more popular. So we've sort of delved into doing everything and learning and growing and being able to offer more services to clients and just be able to basically utilize whatever we can online to get results.
Mate, that's fantastic. And I have to say, 13 years ago, the internet would have been like the Wild West. It was, you know, a new frontier. I remember when SEO was an acronym that people didn't really know what it stood for. SEO, what's that? You know, I did my first SEO gig on, I don't know if you remember ClickBank. Remember all the affiliate products? Oh, mate, I cut my teeth on those sort of products and it was fun times. I was just talking about it today. Things have changed a lot in that space of time, and you've kept up with that a lot. I know that's your core business these days. So I'm really fascinated to ask around that because, you know, obviously internet marketing is a dynamic space. It does change regularly, and you know what worked or didn't work yesterday may or may not work today. How do you manage to keep up with all that? Because it does, you know, require your finger on the pulse the whole time.
Most of it is just being in it the whole time and basically testing and evolving as we go. So normally if there's changes to stuff, we'll start to notice patterns across the board of the sites that we have. As soon as something happens online these days, I hear about it from 15 different people within the day of it happening just through the networks I have anyway. But then I'll see it across any changes. So if Google has an update and it's something major, there should be a pattern across the sites. We've been quite lucky that everything we do, we haven't seen any real impact on Google updates over the years. But the stuff that has happened, we've able to adapt quickly just because we've got so much data. So whereas like if you've got an individual site and there might be an update and all of a sudden you lose rankings and you go to page 5 from page 1, you might say, okay, what happened? What are we doing? The thing. Whereas if something happens to a site, I should have 30, 40, 50 different sites that have something similar happening to them. And if something's happening to them all, then there's obviously something across the board that's changed in the network so that we can obviously look at. So a lot of it's the data and just basically learning. I still learn off so many different people. I'm still doing different extra courses, and even with Google AdWords, I'm still doing my updately courses on everything that they're updating regularly. So it is a lot of learning and growing as you're going. No one's can claim to know everything about anything online because it changes so quickly that if you say that you know everything about that, tomorrow it's going to be different anyway. So it is learning as a lot as you go, but basically being part of it and having that amount of data and doing so much stuff in it is such a valuable thing because it is all about online. It's all about that data and being able to track everything and being able to get the information that comes in.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more. I was having a talk to a friend of mine who's quite into AdWords as well. And she's a self-confessed data freak. And, you know, if you've got a love of data, then internet marketing is going to, you know, fulfill every possible data fantasy you could ever have because you can get so much of it.
Definitely. I'm one that hates accounting and finances. So you'd think I hate numbers, but I love results and data and being able to track stuff and all that sorts of stuff. So it's so interesting being able to see everything. I love reporting and being able to work out what's happening and being able to change things up to change the data.
Yeah, and the thing around that as well is it gives you an opportunity to understand, you know, if I you know take this particular action or if I pull this lever, what's going to be the outcome? And you can test a theory, you can test a hypothesis, and in a relatively short space of time you can see the effect of that. And so it's a wonderful ground for testing and measuring and seeing what does and doesn't work. So you're right, that data is great. But I wanted to just unpick SEO because I know this is, you know, this is core business for you. I know that this is something that you're really, really across. You know, for the people listening on the podcast, they'll know what SEO is. Probably they'll know that it's the organic rankings within a search engine. You know, usually refer to Google, of course, but it, you know, could be Bing or otherwise. But what are the fundamental elements of SEO? You know, is it still on page, off page, or is it a bit more to it than that? Or what? Can you just walk us through that?
Yeah, so I still break everything down to on page, off page. There is a lot of extra stuff that goes into it than just on page, off page, but I still always break it down into those two elements just because it's the easiest way to explain it is that the stuff we're doing on the page is basically the information and everything surrounding it, and then off page is links and everything that's coming into your website and everything you're telling Google about your website from other pages. In short, I always compare basically Google as a matchmaker. So when you think about it as a matchmaker, basically what you're telling them on your page, when someone searches something, Google's looking for the best match. That's all Google is doing. Google is an algorithm that is basically trying to find the best match for whatever someone's typing in there. So basically what we have to do is basically make a website the best match for particular searches. And that's where a lot of people get lost, is because they'll either try to focus on too many searches, and there's no way of getting a one page of a website or to focus on a wide variety of searches. So basically with SEO, what we have to do is say, okay, what do we want to rank for? And that's where we start with any SEO campaign, is basically working up a list of keywords. So the keywords are basically, if people are searching, what we want them to find our website for. And then what we'll do is actually group those keywords out into groups, because then that what that will allow us to do is say, okay, these are our main keywords. This is what we want the homepage to rank for. These other keywords we want inside pages to rank for. So then we'll be able to basically separate those to be able to make those pages more relevant about those terms.
That's fantastic.
So that's the on-page focus of it. And on-page hasn't changed a huge amount over the years. It still comes down to your URL, your title, and then basically the information that's on the page. And that starts with your header and then goes into your images and the content and then everything around it. And then from there, it's the focus on the inner pages and the links between first page and second page and everything like that.
Yeah, okay. So just to recap, just so I want to make sure that we summarize this really neatly for anyone listening. You know, Joss has just shared the inside workings of some SEO, and I want to make sure that we capture this, because if you're working with an SEO provider, you might not be the person who does this, but you need to have an understanding of how it works, and this is really critical, right? So what you're saying essentially, Josh, is you'll find out what keywords people are searching for. So it's kind of like going fishing. You want to go where the fish are biting. You want to put your website in front of people's eyeballs, what they're already looking for, right?
That's exactly right.
Yep. And then what you do is you look at your on page, which is stuff that happens on the website itself, and you want, it's at relevance. Google's the matchmaking service, as you said. And so it's about making sure that your web page is particularly relevant for that particular search term. And that's going to have some things on the page, whether it's, you know, title tags, meta descriptions, you know, labeling images correctly. And of course, the big one is relevant content. Now tell me, because, you know, back in the day when I was, you know, doing a lot of SEO, I was actually having this conversation with someone today. Obviously, the algorithm has become a lot more sophisticated in that time. But it used to be a case of, you know, there's a thing around keyword density. And how many times could you put a given keyword in the text, you know, what percentage sort of thing. And we used to have all these really horrible article spinners where we'd spin articles and, you know, rewrite things to try and make it all sound different. It was duplicate content that we tried to dress up as original content. So can you just tell me, when it comes to content, obviously original content is presumably better, but is keyword density still a thing, or is it mainly around, is Google intelligent enough to be able to say, you know, this is really relevant, even though the keyword may not be actually in the text?
The way that the major changes with it were that a lot of people would be trying to focus on one keyword, and they'd basically put that keyword lots through the one page. And that's basically what keyword density was. Basically, okay, you've got 500 words, you've got this particular keyword in there, 50 times, you got a 10% density of that keyword in the page. So people were trying to get that, and that was basically, but Google's smart now. They basically say, okay, well, that doesn't look natural that a word is repeated that often in a page. So basically, keyword density is relevant, but it still has to look natural throughout the page. So you still have to have amount of pages. And normally what I say is that people are focused too much on trying to get one keyword in there. It may look more natural if you've got a variation of that keyword or a phrase or something that's still relevant. The thing is, Google's smart enough to know that if you've got one keyword and there's another similar keyword that's maybe the opposite way around, so if it's dentist service, it might be service dentist, it may be dental clinic in that area, there may be a different variation of the way you say it, they know that that is about the same topic. So that you don't have to actually have the same keyword on there to actually have that relevance anymore. You can actually have that variation and it'll still give you the same effect as having that keyword mentioned on there. So it's more about having that natural looking information on your page, but it being relevant to the topic. So everything on the page still being relevant without it looking unnatural, and having that one keyword in the same way, written the same way, all over the page just does not look natural. So you're better off keeping it relevant, but it also has to look natural to Google. So
yeah, perfect. And you know, gone are the days, as you say, of keyword stuffing, which is great. But what I wanted to just come to as well, just while we're still on page SEO, and again, for people, you probably won't have to do this, but you should know about this, is if I was getting a content writer to write some content for my website, you know, I've worked with quite a few content writers over the years, as I'm sure you have too. It seems to me that most content writers never write a meta description for the page as well. Is that something that you've noticed, or is it just kind of my experience thus far?
Yeah, they normally won't write a meta description, but the good thing about a meta description is the meta description can be basically your first paragraph or something that's relevant to them anyway. So meta descriptions are quite easy to develop based on if they've written content for the page. Saying that, I'm seeing a lot of content writers really writing in clever ways because they're trying to stand out, but then there's nothing really local or relevant to the search terms actually in the description. They're talking about basically feelings, and that they've gone for the whole, it's if you've seen the book about why, was it the Finding Your Why?
Yeah.
A lot of the people seem to be going for that whole touchy-feely why, about why we can help you and everything else. But what it does is, yeah, it sounds great and everything else, but you still have to get people to your website. So you're not going to rank if the keywords aren't actually mentioned in there, or there's no real feel that it's about a local search term, then there's no reason for Google to actually rank it in there. So you'll have to either not concentrate on SEO and get traffic up some other way, or you have to have pages that are actually relevant to search terms.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point you raise, because I remember when I was doing a lot of website work, we were in the whole direct response camp, and if you weren't in the direct response camp, you were nobody basically. It was all about calls to action, and anything to do with branding or why seemed a little bit offbeat, and then the pendulum seems to have gone the other way. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is there's content for traffic purposes, but there's also content for conversion purposes, right?
Yep, definitely. And sometimes it is finding that balance, and sometimes it may be adjusting it just to make sure that all your main sections of it are mentioning keywords or have particular information about it. And there is sometimes ways of having one paragraph that's this, and then basically the rest of the page being still within the brand and the information and the content that the client wants. So there is a bit of a balancing act, and there is a lot of web designers are going to one page websites now, which I've just sort of said I won't work on ranking a one page website if we're trying to get a lot of keyword ranks, because it's just too hard to get that natural feel in a one page website.
Yeah, cool. Now, mate, I wanted to just quickly come back to off-page SEO, and I know we're kind of hammering this whole SEO description, but I think it is important for the audience to have a bit of an understanding. You spoke about off-page SEO as essentially being links from other sites back to your site, or indeed, you know, other sources back to your site. Now, is a link from a web page, you know, the same as a link from any other web page, or are all links created equally, or backlinks kind of different quality?
They are all different quality. Google looks at the relevance of the website that's linking to you. So if it's in the same industry, there it's obviously going to have a higher relevance. They also look at how many links are on that page. So if it is just a directory, they may say, well, it's just a directory link. There's 200 links coming out from this section of the website. It basically dilutes the quality. So there is plenty of different quality of links. Like, really high quality links can be the homepage of a major newspaper, but that might not be actually relevant to your niche. So, but Google might say, okay, well, it's not really as powerful as what someone might think, because it's not related to your niche. But if it was on the homepage of a major dental journal or something like that, or a major blog or influencer in the industry, then they'll say, okay, yeah, well, that's a relevant link, and it's on a site that's we consider to be an authority. That's a high powered link. So there is that balance of making sure that the links are relevant. Also, when we're talking local websites trying to rank for local terms, directories still get a lot of power just for the fact that citations are used for your Google Maps. So they link into your Google Maps, and that'll help with your maps listing being ranked higher as well. So there's that balance of having links for your website and also the local citations that'll help with your Google Maps listing.
Yeah, so just on citations as well, in the various directories, whether it's TrueLocal or, you know, whatever. One of the things that, you know, I remember, and again, I'm happy for you to tell me if this is current thinking or whether it's moved on from this, is that the format of each citation should be as close to the same as the others. So, yeah, trying to have the address written in the same format, you know, the telephone number in the same format and so on. Is that still the case?
Yeah, so your NAP, which is your name, address and phone number, should be the same across all networks. Because what happens is, if you've got your name, address and format, and what happens is that sometimes one site might list it in a certain way and change it. So what you have to do is, I normally say go with what your Google My Business one is, because that's what your is going to be the ultimate thing that'll rank. So Google has said that your address is this way. All other directories list it the same way, so that basically your name and address and phone number are consistent across the board. Because what happens is, if Google or one of the other directories, what they do is they pull in a lot of that information from directories. And if they see that there's this phone number and there's that phone number, they'll start to say, okay, is this the same place? Is it a different place? It can cause confusion. Sometimes Google and Facebook can actually create their own listings through it from that data, so they could actually duplicate another listing thinking that there's another clinic or another business nearby. So basically, you just have to keep that name, address and phone number consistent across the board. And normally what I do is, when we're setting up, you just basically have that in a document, you know your information, and then that's the information that's used across every citation, directory, everything you do. If you're doing a press release, you're doing everything, just keep it in the same format, because then there's no confusion across the board of information, and Google then gives you the basically the power from those links and directories, knowing that they are the same as your Google My Business listing.
Yeah, fantastic. That's, again, really sage advice. So for everyone listening, you might want to go and check that if you haven't done that already. Certainly hit pause, go and check your listings, make sure the name, address and phone number is in the same format across the various citations and directories, and get that sorted out. Josh, I do want to talk to you a little bit about pay-per-click advertising, because I know that, you know, you're very proficient at that as well, and I know, well, you're proficient across all the elements of internet marketing, but what I wanted to understand is, you know, where you see pay-per-click fitting into an overall marketing plan. Do you kind of, I know with pay-per-click, obviously you're going to get instant traffic versus SEO, which can take a little bit of a while to get the rankings going, But where do you see pay-per-click fit into that? Is it fertile testing ground for keywords and seeing what converts? And just actually while we're on keywords again, I wanted to tie this conversation into buyer intention versus just a straight keyword.
Yeah, so keywords are only as good as if they are actually going to convert into a client. There's no, like, we can rank a site for something, but if that's not relevant to your client, that's actually going to, if they land on the page and then see that your site's not relevant or your focus is not on that type of business, people will just go somewhere else. And that becomes even more important when we're doing pay-per-click and we're actually getting quality scores according to what landing page we're sending them to. So basically, we'll, the same way as for SEO, is we'll work up keyword lists and we'll base them off traffic, but we'll group them according to what ads we want to show to people and what landing pages we want them to land on. So if we're focusing on getting dental implant clients, we'll develop a list of keywords based around that. Don't just go with what Google tells you, because Google will give you as many keywords as they want because they want you to spend as much money as quickly as possible. So if you are going to put a lot of keywords in, make sure that you are checking regularly and getting rid of ones that aren't converting and getting rid of ones that aren't right, and also make sure that you pay attention to negative keywords and other ones that will impact your campaign. But yeah, just basically concentrating on your ads, your keywords, and making sure that they're all separate and not just one campaign thrown all together and hoping for the best. Because you can throw a PPC campaign up and throw money at it, and yeah, you're probably going to get return, especially in an industry where you probably don't have to get a massive amount of clients to get a return on the money. But better the campaign, and obviously the more clients you can get, it's in the long run, you're going to get a lot more clients at a lot better rate, and it's just going to be a better across the board.
Yeah. Yep, no worries. So just on that, I wanted to kind of talk through the landing page you just mentioned. So just as an example, you know, would a typical campaign, let's say we wanted to promote dental implants, just as an example, you know, we create a landing page. So that for everyone listening, a landing page is a page dedicated to, you know, what people are going to come to. So one of the big mistakes I see is people run a paid ad to the homepage, which is not necessarily relevant to the ad that they've just clicked on. And so you create a special page, which is a landing page. They click on the ad, they go to a landing page. They would you have, you know, obviously information around dental implants there. Would you create an opt-in on that page and have an email sequence off the back of that? Or what would you do there?
I've tested opt-ins and different stuff for dental clients. And I've found that...
It's not high, is it?
Majority of the time, what we're trying to do is just get them on the phone anyway. So we're better off trying to convert them as quickly as possible without trying to get them to opt in, get them information. Opt-ins work great for certain cosmetic services where you can really educate them on stuff, but majority of the time you want to find the quickest way to get them to call you, because that's normally the going to be the best way to convert them into a client. So you basically want to get them landing on a page that is relevant so that they feel like they're on a relevant page. And then also make sure that they've a quick way for them to contact you. So a lot of people forget that 80% of your clients these days are going to be on mobile devices. So you need to make sure that there's click call buttons to quickly call and get on the phone, because you're going to convert them a lot better than if you're just basically trying to educate them on a page, because all you're doing is if you're trying to educate them, there's a better chance that they'll just go over to another site, learn some more, or go to another one, and you've missed the opportunity to actually have them on the phone and get them in for a consultation or be able to talk to them further about it.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. One of the things that, you know, we've found in our own marketing is that if in some ways, you know, we try to get that call to come as quickly as possible, which is clearly what we're after. But what we've found in the past is when we extend that period is sometimes you get all the information and then go and have the service done elsewhere, which is frustrating. So we've had to modify that. One of the things I wanted to ask you about as well is the concept of remarketing or retargeting. You know, there is some thoughts and discussion around whether Google will allow retargeting on a health service. Do you have any thoughts around that?
I'm not currently using it, and I have found in the past that Google doesn't seem to be that keen on, and a lot of campaigns won't get approved. So they're getting even more particular with health services. I've tested it and it seems to work okay across the display network. The search network still seems to be very iffy, and they seem to be very particular about terms on sites and stuff. So I'm not currently using it a huge amount with clients on Google. On Facebook's a different story. It's very easy to do on Facebook, and it's becoming increasingly easy to set up a pixel and or set up a custom audience and really retarget an audience very quickly.
Yeah, cool. So just on Facebook, and yeah, I would like to just, you know, obviously Facebook's got that wonderful demographic profiling that you can use, you know, with relative ease. What are the advantages of, you know, say an AdWords campaign versus a Facebook campaign? Is it the fact that the audience is on Facebook so much, or is it the cost per click, or is it a combination of everything? What are the key factors that you would think about as you go, well, should I do pay-per-click on AdWords or pay-per-click on Facebook?
The way I normally describe it is that Google is great for services and when people want something now. So when you're basically looking for something now, you're going to go to Google and search for it. Facebook's great because people are on there all the time and you can be reminding them, but they're not necessarily, no one's going to be on Facebook thinking I'm looking for a dentist.
Yeah. No.
Yes, it's slowly going to become that way. Facebook is slowly integrating different parts of local and pages to be more like a Google Maps and have a bit more information for searching and stuff. But at the moment, I still find that if someone's looking for something, the normal response from someone else is going to be just Google it. So I normally say if we want to get the people that are searching for a service now, so if you're after people that are looking for services right now, Google AdWords is always going to be the quickest way to get in front of people searching for your service straight away. Facebook is great for being able to target particular segments and start to get them to know about your services, start to get them a bit more information, and you have a bit more flexibility of getting videos and getting images, getting a bit more interactive with them, and then being able to find the best way to connect with them now. So that's a normal way I describe it, is that, yeah, if you're wanting people that are looking for something now, you're still going to be going towards Google. But if you want to be able to really create campaigns that are able to connect with certain audiences and start to get a bit more information out to them about particular services, that's why I find it works great when you've got a good service that has a particular audience that you know you can market to, and you can get some good videos, good images out there, and then get them over to a landing page or get them to call in for a consultation, get them to fill out a form, whatever objective you've got, that's what you can do with Facebook.
And what about, you know, Instagram and so on? You know, obviously Instagram has been bought by Facebook. So do you have any thoughts around Instagram advertising?
So I utilize most of my Facebook ads across Instagram now. So with Facebook purchasing Instagram, you can basically just choose Instagram as an advertising option when you're setting up a Facebook ad. So the same ad will then get shown across the Instagram network. So you can do that for most any media that you're putting into your ad that meets Instagram guidelines, so that if it's the video is under 60 seconds and the image is certain way, or it has the call to action. So there's certain call to actions that if you're obviously trying to get them to message you on Facebook, if it's showing on Instagram, the call to action doesn't meet across the networks. So there's certain ones that meet, but I'm finding Instagram's great, especially for any sort of images or videos that people might be on Instagram and attracted to. So the cosmetic type ones seem to work really well because that's what people seem to get people's attention on Instagram. They're used to looking at good looking people. They're used to looking at nice smiles and different images. So Instagram's been bombarded now, you'll notice, with whitening products and all the different ones is because people are used to seeing those sorts of images across there. And also you can get images that'll get their attention quickly. So people will stop and have a look and then say, oh, well, that's a product. And then they'll click through to a page or click a call or click through to a shopping cart or whatever objective they've got. So Instagram seems to work well as long as you've got the right media and the right type of product to get their attention.
It's a really interesting thing that you just mentioned the word media, because, you know, it's, I was thinking a little bit about this the other day, and even though that we're living in a really digital age and we're still, you know, talking about Facebook and Google and Instagram, the whole marketing triad still works. It's the whole, you know, who's my market, what's the message, and what's the medium that I'm going to use to transmit. It's the same principle. It's just applied to digital. And it's funny because, you know, those old marketing principles hold true. It's just the medium that's changed. And so I really love the fact that you've addressed that fairly and squarely. What I wanted to do just on while we were talking about Instagram a moment ago was, you know, because Instagram is largely viewed on a mobile device, you know, there's been, you know, some talk about ads showing up when you're in a particular radius of a certain location and all those sorts of things. So really geo-targeting the ad based on where the user might be. Have you come across that so much?
Yeah, you can definitely target them according to being in that location over a period of time. So if someone's traveling into the city or something and they're in the city, you can show them ads according to just being in there and not actually living in the location. So it can work well for obviously different industries where they know people are traveling through and they might want them to stop into a bar or a restaurant. I haven't done a huge amount with it with dentists, because normally your dental market are normally going to a dentist into their local area, but you can definitely start to. I find the geo-targeting on Instagram and it just targeting in general on Instagram isn't totally as refined as Facebook. Even Facebook's not perfect these days. You'll find ads that are getting shown to the wrong audiences and everything else, but that's also according to the information that Facebook has. So if your Facebook page, if you've liked some page and then that page might have changed to another page, you might suddenly get ads shown that you might not think are relevant, but they might actually have been relevant because the page has changed to a different topic. So it all comes down to their algorithm being able to have that information. But all these different medias are basically just different advertising networks now, and they're basically just collecting data and being able to show you ads according to the data that you've given them.
It's funny, yeah, that's a conversation, again, I was having this morning about the amount of data we're giving up in this whole process, which allows people to market to us in a very specific and personal way. It's critical for marketers, but, you know, just as a consumer, it's important to know what data you are putting out there, I guess, because then people, you know, like the marketers will pick up that data and make use of it. Another interesting thing happened a little while ago, Josh. I was at an event overseas and I met this young girl. She's a 15-year-old entrepreneur. She's a really smart girl and doing some wonderful things in the world. And I was just laughing to myself because she said to me, oh, email, golly, you know, that's for old people. Facebook, that's for old people. You know, I only have an email address so I can open my social accounts. And she was talking a lot about the advertising that she's doing on Snapchat. And obviously that's a different demographic and you've got to kind of go where your market is. And, you know, I can't imagine there's too many 15-year-olds making dental decisions for themselves at this point in time. It's still mum and dad. But where do you see the future of Snapchat in terms? And I know we're kind of getting into specifics. I'm sorry that this is so detailed for everyone listening. I'm having a bit of a geek out here. Don't mind me. But where do you see that coming across as a marketing platform for dentistry?
So Snapchat, the only main difference with it is that it's basically a shorter form of media. So you have to be able to get a message across very quickly, and there's ads across the snaps now. So as an advertising platform, I know a lot of people are finding it quite effective, and there's no reason why it can't be effective as long as it can be targeted and you can get the information. The main stumbling block I find with stuff like Snapchat is actually getting the content, and that's a stumbling block with a lot of dentists and everything else, is having the content or producing the content. I find that a lot are very hesitant to start producing videos and doing a lot of stuff, even though they've been told multiple times that it's going to be beneficial for them. I've had a client that for multiple years, and I've told him numerous times that we need to start doing some videos for the clinic, need to start doing some stuff, and he did some videos the other day, and he messaged me and said, well, those videos are really effective. Said, that's why I've been saying it. And it just takes that, them getting past that initial thing of that it's not actually that hard to produce some videos or get the content together, to actually start to get there. And half the battle of advertising across these networks is having the content and having the stuff that we can actually get out to the people to actually get them to take action for whatever, because you still do need images and you still need videos and blog posts and different information that you can feed to your network to actually get them to take action and purchase services and do everything, because it is still just part of the way that people are consuming information these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, we've spoken a lot about traffic, you know, whether it's, you know, SEO, pay-per-click, you know, all the different platforms and so on. I wanted to just talk about the other half of the equation, and again, very simplistically, traffic and conversions. What are the essential elements that you see that a website should have just to really assist conversions? You spoke about one earlier being mobile and, you know, mobile friendly and having click-to-call functionality. What are the other things that you would see as being, you know, pretty important on a website to help it convert better?
I normally say that you have to be able to go to a website and be able to tell straight away what the page you're landing on is about. And too often I go to a website and I look at the first half of the page or what I land on, and I cannot tell what it's about. And if I got my son to have a look at it, and kids are great because they look at it from a very simplistic view, and they can't say, oh, they might say, oh, that picture's of a bridge. It must be about a building company. Said, oh, no, that's a bridge in their local community. And they've thrown it up there as a main picture. So you have to be able to quickly see what a website's about, because you only have so much time to get their attention. And if it doesn't look relevant, people will too quickly just jump off to another page. And that comes down to as well, can they take action quickly as well? Because a lot of the times people might not be going to your website to be educated. They might be going to your website to get your phone number or to click to call you straight away. So can they call you straight away? Locally, is your address in a clear spot, or at least your location, so they can know that you are actually a local website? Because not everyone, there's so many businesses names that are very broad terms that don't have anything to do with the local community in their actual name. And then you go to their website and their address is down the bottom, or their address is on a contact page. So for a lot of it, I can scroll down and go, okay, well, I don't even know you're a local business yet. Oh, there you are. There it says something about the local community. But by that stage, I might have jumped to another page. So what it comes down to is being able to communicate your message in a clear way and quickly. So the main elements are getting across your contact details, and also having ways to take action to those, and then worry about your message and your images and your services and everything else. But making sure that as soon as they land on there, they can basically say, okay, this website's about something.
Yeah, absolutely. And what are you thinking about above and below the fold? Is there still relevance around what happens above the fold, or is that less relevant with all the mobile stuff these days?
It's probably less relevant with mobile, but I still say you need all those key elements of your phone number, your address and everything above the fold, and possibly a call to action or some sort of something to keep them on the page above the fold. And on mobile, it should be quite similar, because it should be basically a similar site, just reduced down to a mobile format, and with the phone number and address changed to maybe change to buttons instead of actually being written. So it should be fairly similar, but you should be able to access it quickly.
Yep. Okay, so with all the mobile stuff, it's essentially what you're saying is it's what we'd call a responsive design as opposed to a designated mobile site as well?
Yeah. The majority of sites these days should be built in a responsive way. And then have mobile elements like your click to call buttons, and your click for a booking, click for an address. So your main things that people might want on a desktop site, they should be the things that people can easily just click and take action on a mobile site. So as long as your site, and when I say responsive, if your site's really, really big and has a lot of information on the homepage and everything else, make sure the web designer reduces and chooses stuff that doesn't display on your on a mobile site, you can choose what you want to show on a mobile version, and you can choose to not show certain elements. And the stuff that's going to take either a long time to load or the stuff that's going to just take up a lot of a page, there's no use having it on the mobile version, because people aren't going to scroll for 10 minutes to get to the bottom of a page if it's just got information after information. You're better off having a video that says the same information that they might actually watch on their mobile.
Yep. Okay, cool. So I think that's, again, for everyone listening, that's really sage advice to make sure that you've got all those key elements on your website. Hey, Josh, we have covered, internet marketing, at least, from a point of view of, conversions and from traffic, in a fairly brisk clip, but also we've covered a lot of territory. If you were going to leave the audience with a couple of key tips around, getting their online marketing up and running effective, what would be three things that you'd say that the dentist should really focus on in their internet marketing?
So with your anything internet marketing, you want to know what your objective is. So if you need clients now, then you need to work out the best way to get them. So the quickest way is obviously going to be AdWords. If you haven't got a website, then you need to get a website up, because a website not only is somewhere to send people to educate them and get them across, it is also basically a business trust point for any business these days. People want to know that the business has got a website. They trust any business that's got a website more. So the thing, but then also you can educate your platform. So the quickest way for any traffic, I'd tell them, is to get an AdWords campaign and just start testing. And that, if you're not sure about it, basically contact someone that deals in it and can actually help you set it up. If you're doing anything Facebook, I quite often hear, oh, Facebook ads don't work. If your Facebook ads aren't working, it's normally to do with the message that you and what you're trying to sell to basically the audience. Because on Facebook, it's all around basically getting the right message in front of the right audience and then having the right solution to any problem that they have. So I would say, start, get your website, get AdWords, and then concentrate on basically getting to know your audience on Facebook. So, and the quickest way to get to know your audience is basically just start posting, start get to know your customers, start being social with them as well, and just basically getting to know them more, because then that'll enable you to be able to get the right services out to your audience. And I think any issues with marketing all come down to what I said before, and that's just not knowing what your objective is. It's easy to say, okay, yep, we want to do this, but then what do you actually want to achieve from it? Okay, do you want to actually get 10 new clients a month? Okay, how do we actually get those patients? What are we going to do to get those patients? What are we willing to spend to get those patients in the door? So basically, start to understand what you want to achieve out of it, and then start breaking it down into, okay, what's the best way to do it? And the quickest way is probably talking to someone that knows. So there's plenty of dentists out there. There's plenty of guys like you that'll be able to give advice on ways to start and get out there. But yes, start to get to know what you want to achieve, and then basically from there you can basically work out, okay, how do we achieve that? Talk to someone and see how you can actually achieve that with online marketing.
Mate, that's fantastic. Listen, on behalf of everyone here at Savvy Dentist, you've been incredibly generous with not just your time, but your knowledge. And it's clear that this is a bit of a passion for you as much as a profession. And so I can just tell I've been following your stuff now for so long. It's so solid. It's really contemporary. It's, up to date with everything that changes in the internet marketing space. So I really want to thank you for bringing us the latest and greatest as it relates to online marketing for dentists. Mate, what I wanted to just mention really quickly is I've been reading your blog now for a little while, and it's loaded with really good information there. So my whole philosophy for everyone listening is you won't be the person who's doing your SEO or running your ads campaign or whatever it is, but you need to have enough knowledge to be able to ask intelligent questions of the providers customers that you're working with. And Josh has given you so much knowledge here that you'll be able to ask those questions. I'd really encourage everyone to utilize the blog on Josh's site, which is jrmg.com.au. It's a great resource if you want to get schooled up around, you know, how SEO works, what's a backlink, are they all created equally, all that sort of stuff. You know, you want to be able to understand that. Because one of the things in my own experience, I've found that, you know, when I used to work in this space a lot, I'd go to an internet marketing conference, and I kid you not, Josh, you've probably heard and seen this as well. I'd go to every internet marketing conference, and there'd be someone up on stage, and they'd say, go and talk to your local dentist, A, because they need it, B, they can afford it, and C, they've got no idea. And it was this whole culture of really trying to target dentists for online marketing. But I think, you know, thankfully the profession's woken up to that a bit, and there's a whole lot of dodgy providers in this space, but you are one of the most solid, reputable, and knowledgeable guys I've ever come across, mate. So thank you for being so generous with your time and information today. You're a superstar. Thanks, mate.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.